Good morning. Welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Tuesday, the 12th of October. Have you missed me? I'm sure you have missed me. I'm going to be honest, I really have sort of switched off for a week, which has been lovely. Obviously, we've still got some Maltese issues, which are ongoing. But other than that, Sam got back and we've done a few bits around the house, been for walks. Football has obviously been very limited. I've not watched 1 minute of international football at all. Not interested. I'll cover that in something. I'm going to upset a few people. I won't be watching the World Cup next year. I might do some pods on it, but I won't be watching it. So yeah, I really have, for the first time for a long, long time, I did genuinely have sort of shut things down a bit and had a nice time. But obviously lots has happened over the period, so I've got lots to fill people in on. The pods are going to come back. Today I've got Steve Williamson on, so I've done I'm going to have some people on, and Steve's come back. Steve did one last year, and Steve and I catch up now for an hour. Great, always a lovely guy to talk to, Steve. So I'm sure some of you will enjoy that. I've been to see the Bond movie. I desperately wanted to do a pod on it last week, but I thought there'd be people who haven't seen it, so I will have my Bond movie review. We went and bought some chairs in IKEA. That was good fun. I vowed to never, ever, ever go to IKEA. Sam took me to an IKEA about 20 years ago, and I vowed to never, ever return to one. But last week, she got me at a weak moment and talked me into going to IKEA, and we went to IKEA at Lakeside. We've decorated the dining room completely, and she wanted to get some new dining chairs, and she'd seen these in IKEA, wanted to go and have a look at them. She'd seen them online, didn't want to buy them without having a look at them and testing them. And we went to IKEA and found the chair. I mean, it's just an absolute, whoever designed that, I mean, I like the Scandinavians, but what are you doing? These follow the arrows, and it just drives you mad. Anyway, whatever, we got to the section with the dining furniture, found these chairs. Online, they were £179 a chair. In the store, they were £99, because my view was, well, have a look at them. She can have a sit on it. Yeah, that'll do. I'll order them online, get them delivered, this, that and the other. But they were £99, so I went back online. No, wrong. So we wanted eight. We wanted two with arms, which were a little bit more expensive, and six for the side of the table, three either side. So I said, right, the two with arms were the same price, so I ordered them online, but we'll take the six. We'll take six of the ones to go down the sides of the table. And right, okay, and then you've got to head off to this zone to pick them up. And I thought everything is flat packed in IKEA. But these weren't. When we got to this collection area where you have to go and find them, the boxes were actually chair shaped bar the legs. So the back and the seat are one piece. So I looked at them and said, well, we're not getting six of them in the car. And Sam's economic brain, she said, well, how many do you think we can get in? I said, four. I said, we can get four in definitely, but there's no way we're getting six in. So she said, well, let's get four. She said, and at the price, we might as well get four, take them home, and then come back again and get the other two. I thought, Jesus Christ, I can't be doing with all that. Can't we just have four? But she's looking at it, whatever it is, 160, 170 quid saving, and she's got them that day. So I've got the four up, massive queue, really busy. Queuing up in this zigzaggy, wormy queue. Get through, do the old self-checkout, get out to the car, can get the four boxes in, and I'm desperately looking at a way to get the other two in. And then I just thought, you know what, we don't need the boxes. If I take the boxes off these, I can get four chairs in, I can get another two chairs, go and get the other two, unbox them, put them in. So I stood in IKEA, she got in the car, wanted no part of that. She got in the car while I stood in the car park unboxing and unwrapping these chairs, Everybody looking at me, I was making an absolute... I'd filled the parking space next to me with cardboard while I was doing it, and then I went and got a couple of trolleys, filled them in. I went in, got another two, come out, did that. I got six chairs in the car. Apologies if anybody listening to this works at IKEA Lakeside. Apologies for filling four of your trolleys with cardboard and leaving it outside the door. But I figure you're as well placed to get rid of it as me. But there, see? Always solutions, not problems. Always solutions. Save money, save the trip up and back. You know, it's like an hour's journey for us, and if the crossing's bad, it's a nightmare. And got exactly what we need. So there you go. So if you do work in IKEA, I apologise. But there, if you don't work in IKEA, that's what to do. Buy it, bin the boxes. You can get so much more in. Chairs are up. Lovely. Yeah, bond review. I'm going to do the bond review. I'm going to leave that. I might do that next Monday. We have got, obviously, we've got football returning. We have got summer school going on. We've got the podcast. Obviously, we've been doing the football reviews and things. So everything will be returning to some form over time. I'm going to get, I know I keep saying that, I'm going to get a better structure to the pod. I'm going to do a Mindset Monday on next Monday, so they'll come back. I'm going to talk about patience, and I've got another really key element that I want to talk about. We will have another international break in 3 or 4 weeks. It's absolutely nauseating, isn't it? All this, and then obviously next year's football program's all going to go to shit as we try and get this nonsense in Qatar done. So there is lots of stuff to cover, as well as talking to some of the members and other people who I think can offer some value. So we start, as I say, today with Steve. So yes, it is good to be back. I have really enjoyed the week, but it is time to knuckle down and do another good months of hard work. I might certainly look in the future to make more time of the using the international breaks. Obviously, we've had fuel crisis. We need to talk about that. I talked about the rising of wages, and that's provoke some arguments. So I'm going to explain the economics of the country we are headed towards. I am telling you, people, write it down now. By budget's going to be in March, so certainly by April 2022, I'm going to tell you now that inflation in this country will be running at greater than 5%. We are going to be heading towards 10%, whether we'll get there. But I'm telling you now, inflation, note it down. Ian's told you 12th of October, we will be at over 5% inflation come April next year. I'm going to explain the economics of the country to you and why, once again, we are on a path to shit at the minute. We've got the fuel crisis, which I think I did do a pod was going on. I have only just got fuel. I believe Simon Dennis has had all sorts of problems up in Luton. It isn't right here still. Did manage to get some, but it's still most, wherever you go, there seems to be more pumps shut than open. I do like the story of the people who followed the concrete lorry. I did think that was funny. I'll cover that. But yes, there's lots to come. As always, this is the place to be, where you'll get fully educated in all walks of life and become better people. That's it. It's all it's about. Annoying, aren't I? And I've been running the polls on Twitter, and I'm going to keep saying it. I love it. It is so entertaining. Everybody is so entertaining with it. I actually say it, talking to Steve, there is a set target at the end of it. Every single score, every question is set in a certain way. It is on a psychological basis. I'm looking for certain things, and what I love is, why isn't my answer on there? They're not valid answers. It doesn't matter. It's how you answer it. That's all we're looking at. The question is up there, how you answer it, and everyone will have a score, and those scores will be added up. There'll be a Google Sheet available in January with all the questions on, scores for every answer. So even if you've missed a poll, you'll be able to go and say, well, I would have answered that, put the score down, and it'll be really interesting. You'll be able to give yourself a score, and you can put as much benefit to it as you like, or as much credence to it, whether you think it's a load of old nonsense, or you might actually go, yeah, I am like that. You never know. And then that's a good starting point for us to work on in 2022. Right. Coming up, I've had an hour with Steve, which is coming up now, so hopefully you enjoy that. Two old farts talking about punting, betting, horse racing, everything. And my next pod, I will be back with you Friday, start the previews, and then we'll be into the normal structure. And we will be into the normal structure. I'm going to sort it out so that we do these things properly. But here is Steve and I. Right. Right, good morning. I'm happy to say that Steve Williamson joins us again. Steve did a pod with me probably about a year ago. Steve, morning, Steve, by the way.
Good morning, Ian. It was actually the 13th of May last year.
Well, there you go. I like a man who can remember. So that's over. Yeah, well, nearly 18 months ago. Wow.
Yeah, I can remember I was actually sat in my van at the moment, at the time, sat by the side of the road, between two fields of corn. That was, of course, when the original lockdown was on.
Yeah, I remember you being in your van, that's right.
Yeah, and that was we did that one on Skype, but maybe I'm going to come into the modern world now. And
yeah, I've got Steve onto Zoom now. We've talked him through Zoom. Obviously, a lot's happened in 18 months, Steve. Cornwall's been overrun with visitors. How's it been?
Yeah, to be honest, the last few months since lockdown, hardly been out. Well, I say hardly been out. I've avoided all the holiday makers and that, you know. It's been extremely busy down here. And in fact, it's still busy now because late season, you do tend to get quite a few of the people who like to come on holiday when there's no children around.
Yeah.
So therefore, and September, October tends to be quite dry down here. And it has been remarkably dry recently. I must tell you, Ian, that this morning about 4:30, as you know, I tend to work through the night sometimes, as indeed you do. And I thought, well, I better have a check on what we spoke about last time. So I went down your archive list there, and I was a bit concerned because I got to the 25th of May, and the headline of your podcast was, "I told you he was a prat." I thought... but fortunately, I carried on, and it was the 13th of May, so I made myself endure listening to it so that I didn't repeat anything today.
And a quick listen back. I speak very well of many people as well, you know, Steve. a few people have triggered me about Trump coming back in 2024.
We look forward to that.
I'm sure we do. I'm sure people who listen to me are.
It gives you some material, doesn't it?
And then Sunday, I bumped into an old mate of mine. I just popped up the golf club because I knew some lads were playing golf. So I just popped up to have a cup of tea. We had a power cut here. So I popped up there and I literally sat in my seat, ordered a cup of tea. There's about eight guys there. And one of them turned to me, he said, "Did you see Boris in the week?" He said, "Wasn't he brilliant? He was so funny." And I just lost my shit there. And then that was that. I drank my tea and pissed off.
Off again.
Obviously been through two lockdowns. And then last March, I believe it was March, correct me if I'm wrong, you started on, well, this March, it'd been early part of this year, I think, Spectre Racing and helping people out, trying to show them what you do. For those of you not... don't know of Steve. Steve is a successful pre-race horse trader, exceptionally good at what he does, very disciplined, very helpful on Twitter, which is how I came across him. Always posting good snippets of one of the few people who does good snippets of information on there. Even I post a load of shit. But Steve always, when he posts something, I mean, he does post some very terrible jokes. It has to be said. Yeah. But the jokes aside, the betting info is different class. Fantastic stuff. So you set down this road of helping people. Obviously, I've dealt with the public for 14 plus 15 years coming up, Steve. How have you found it?
It was very interesting, Ian, and it still is. Last year on the podcast, I remember, I listened to what I said last time, and it was that it all started with a guy called Doug in Southend who asked about help with trading. And from there, and I said to you that I was hoping to get around the country in the latter parts of the year.
Right, yeah.
And do that. But as it transpired, we actually decided to set up the one-to-one service in, as you say, is when in actual fact it was February / March. And a lot of people were very interested. And I guess it was the right time for everything because lockdown was on, it was dark, and it appealed to people. And we've been doing that since then, and it still continues now. And currently in the phase of taking the website down and starting another website, which will probably be, there's no urgency for it, in January time. We're working under my own name.
Yeah.
But no, it's still got a lot of, all the people are on board are still there. Some are less active than others, and some have picked it up and have run with it. And of course, others, it's been a question of having a look at it and seeing if it fits into their lifestyle. Because to be fair, having a set and forget system is completely different from sitting down at a computer and manually trading. I have to say that since I started posting on Twitter, which was around the end of 2017 with P&L screenshots and stuff like that, and hopefully I was, at the time, all I was doing was telling people my trading journey so that hopefully that would enable people to avoid some of the mistakes that I made.
Mm.
But I think nowadays, in the last couple of years, certainly, and you'll have noticed the same thing, whether it's football, horse racing, or whatever sport it is, there are so many people now and so many different methods touted on Twitter, whether it be data-based, whether it be lay to back, back to lay, that I guess it's a real minefield for a lot of people.
Mm.
Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. I think, I mean, you know, I've built up a large following over time through numerous channels of the website, being on Twitter, Telegram, whatever it may be. You know, we've done some seminars. And I like to always try and think like you've done, to try and help people. But it is an absolute cesspit world that we work in. I genuinely think that. And it's a double-edged sword for me, because the marketers know that the gamblers will lap it up, so they do more of it. And you try and get the gamblers to just take a step back. You know, I've done whatever it be, Mindset Mondays, blog posts, summer school, to actually take a step back and say, just try and do one thing really well. Like, you do one thing really well. You know, you sit and do the same thing. Yes, it's time consuming, but in effect, your own boss can work your own hours. But yeah, it is horrible out there. And you know, it is for the people listening to this, you know, whether it's doing the thing you do or doing the bits I do, you've just got to try and narrow in on one thing first and do it really well. And you know, I always say less is more, start small. But like you say, it's the lure, isn't it, on Twitter of, I mean, I used to post screenshots to inspire people, not for, oh, look at me, try and if you knuckle down, this is what you can do.
Yeah.
And every time I did it, I just got abused. So I just stopped doing it and thought, well, you know, but I was open. I lost 20 grand in October 2019. And I told people.
You came back from Japan.
And I told people, you know, and it's never fun, you know. Yours is a lot more controlled because you know exactly where you are pre-race. Well, I do. You know, you get a run of results in 2 weeks go against you. It can be horrible. You go and walk the dog and think, Jesus Christ, when's this going to turn? But for people starting out, I totally agree with you. It is an absolute minefield what to do.
I think the thing is with myself is that, as you know, I mentioned before that the only course I ever did was with Peter Webb's Bet Angel Masterclass. Yeah. Around about 8 years ago, and I found that having a low risk strategy suits me. It suits me, and it still does suit me. Variance, I'm not so comfortable with that. And so the thing is that I just stick to what I know. I've had friends of mine who have said, oh, you'd be really good at poker because you're very disciplined. Well, my view on it would be that I would be years behind them because I'm a complete novice. Whereas, you know, I've had the experience on this. I've been doing it, repeating it. And the constant repetition enables you to get ahead of the game. I guess in a way you could use the analogy of that little story I mentioned the other day where there was the two guys in the forest and in the distance, they see a huge great bear, and they both kneel down, and one of them starts praying, and the other guy starts tying his shoelaces up. And the one who's praying says, he said, what are you doing that for? He said, you can't outrun a bear. He said, no. He said, but I only have to run faster than you. Mm. And that sort of sums it up, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think, certainly on the football side, we know there's big players, there's bots that kick in. And I know that the likelihood is I can't beat them. But I don't have to beat them. I have to beat the average Saturday afternoon punter who's throwing market money in the market at the wrong prices over a period of time. And that's what you have to do. And the people who are chasing goals because they've got themselves in a mess and all that, it still all goes on. That is a great, you told me that one the other day. It is a great story. That's exactly right. How do you find the exchange now, liquidity and things like that?
Yeah, it's funny actually, because somebody asked me that the other day. I personally, although one tends to see comments on Twitter about the exchanges and is there isn't as much money there as there used to be, I think for the average Joe, the volumes there are no problem at all. I suspect if there is an issue, it is simply with horse racing that there are too many meetings. And so on a daily basis, if there were four or five meetings, I was doing daily previews from April right through till last week. And I thought, I've done enough of those now, where basically I was looking at market identification so that people during the course of the day would know what to look for, give them a guide for every race. And one of the comments I always used to make was, like if Ascot, York, or the big meetings were on, that's where the volumes were. Whereas if you're looking at a race in Ireland, the liquidity was much lower. And of course, when you're trading, if you don't have the money in the market, then you're going to get the gaps there. And obviously that leads to more volatility, and you've got to be smarter in the market there. Of course, the interesting thing is that, like I've always said, with football, there are more football traders than there are horse racing traders. However, and it still remains the same, that horse racing is the number one sport pre-event for volume, liquidity, and it just is the best. 80% of the trading is done pre-race and 20% is in play. Whereas with everything else, football, cricket, tennis, it's completely the opposite way around. It's a bit boring. I'm still doing the pre-race, and it will hopefully continue for as long as the race is there.
You're good at it and you enjoy it. And it's, it is interesting, that, isn't it, with the volume. And I mean, one of the things, I've done some, I don't know what you want to call it, coaching sessions with people, whatever. And that's one of the things I said. They see a figure in the top right corner on Betfair, matched money, the money that's actually been bet. And it might be a million, whatever. Firstly, to understand that it's actually half that amount because Betfair do £2 on either side, always have done. So if you put a £2 bet on, it ends up adding £4 to that total.
Have you ever put £2 into a market?
I haven't, no. But then that figure becomes irrelevant, really, when you're you need the money moving through the market at the minute you want to trade. The liquidity and the volume are two completely different things.
Absolutely. I had to point that out to a couple of people one day, is that they are different animals.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The volume is the volume, and the liquidity is the ability to get in and out of the market.
Exactly. And certainly, exactly like you say, the big meetings affect the other meetings. On a Saturday afternoon when you've got Bundesliga, Premier League, perhaps one La Liga game, and the championship's pretty good. You look at the liquidity and the goal markets in League One, League Two, there might be 30, 40, 50, 60,000 matched, but the actual gaps and money to trade over 3.5 goals or whatever, sit there all afternoon, it doesn't move. It's horrific. And I think people do get stuck on, one of the things I'm dead against in football is leaving money up. You know, putting
I'd never ever do that.
Because you just get eaten alive
get steamrolled over.
Yeah, and you just get it gets taken when the value is absolutely 100% not there. Yeah, and I sort of try and say that to people. Don't flag what you want to do and don't leave the money up.
One of the things I encourage and one of the mantras is always offer to market, never take the price. So you're always looking to get in at the best price.
Yeah.
And you know that when you did the one-to-one with me, the horse was coming down to a certain price. I make a judgment call as to where the entry point should be. And even if when I make the entry point and I'm confident with it, I'm not bothered that if it goes two or three ticks against me, because I've made that judgment. Okay, maybe in milliseconds now to maybe... years ago, it would take me sort of 30 seconds to work it out. You need to be, otherwise, if you get the entry point right, and then getting out of the market becomes so much easier. But if you make a bad entry into the market, then you're spending the next few minutes or even longer trying to get out of a hole.
Yeah.
It's a lot more difficult.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, I really enjoyed that idea with you, and I've done a little bit of it. Not, it's a time thing with me, and you know, that's the one thing I'd say with what you do. It is, you know, every day racing is relentless, as you say. You get to whatever time today, 1 o'clock, whatever it starts, and then it's just relentless all the way through. But it is that it's the mistakes that people make, isn't it? That you know, you do it because you're in that rhythm and you know exactly what it's that. You know, you see tragic stories on Twitter, I just let one go in play and things like that. It's all those little mistakes that you sort of try and say to people, if you cut that shit out, if you cut that nonsense out and really focus, even if they only made 3 or 4 horse trades a day, rather than trying to do every race, you know, and they might have missed an entry or whatever, just get 3 or 4 and what you can actually go and have your cup of tea at 6 o'clock in the evening and go, I only did 4. But I got it right, and I did exactly what I wanted to do, rather than all the shit and mistakes that people tend to make around it that end up, you know, seeing them give up. You know that, you know, you knew when you started, whatever you had, let's say you had 100 people, you know that 6 months' time you're only going to have 10, 15, 20% still going. That's the nature of the business we're in. I mean, when I used to do seminars, you know, I used to go and do Birmingham, and I used to stand in the room, and that was my opening gambit. I said, I'm going to show you and tell you today how you can make some money, but I'll guarantee you, if we all met in this room next year, only 2 or 3 people of you will still be doing it.
That, Ian, would remind me, when I was in the life insurance business, I remember going to a meeting in the 1980s, when a very successful pensions expert stood up and was telling everybody how he earns £250,000 a year. And he said, don't you think that I'm worried by sharing this information with you? And he said, not at all. He said, because I know most of you won't use it. And it's the same thing, isn't it? I think one of the things which I learned, and I think my biggest learning curve with trading is the ability to just watch and wait. And I posted a couple of times on Twitter that doing nothing is overrated. Sometimes when you start trading, no matter what sport it is, there's this tendency to, I want to trade.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas you learn that you don't want to trade all the time. Uh-huh. You watch. And you understand what's happening.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. I mean, my next Mindset Monday is actually on patience. That's what it is. Because I we did a few sessions last week on Zoom, and I've got a couple of people who asked me for this weekend. I'm going to do one on our platform. I spend a lot of time sat on my hands. I might spend a lot of time in front of a screen, but I spend a lot of it sat on my hands. Because
I find that with pre-race, for example. I think it's generally accepted that unless it's a big meeting, most of the trading happens in the last 5 minutes. And with some traders, it's in the last 3 minutes. Now, whilst that may seem like a very narrow period of time, a lot can happen in 2 or 3 minutes. And when I open a market, I may see instantly what's going to happen. But other times, there's times when I open a market and I haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue. So what do? I do nothing.
Yeah.
I just sit. I sit. And then the market develops, and then you understand what's going to happen. And again, another thing which I think is important in any trading, I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, but one of the things that I learned, one of the things that's most beneficial, was learning and understanding that you have to have losses, that your trading is a mixture of profits and losses.
Mm.
Now, initially, when I was doing P&Ls on Twitter, say 4 years ago, I was desperate to try and do 20 out of 20 winning trades and get them up there, you know, to make sure they're right. But the more you try to do that, it's harder and harder. You know, you just got to accept that, you know.
Yeah.
So you have 16 losses, 16 wins and 4 losses.
Mm.
And as long as your profits are larger than your losses, then you're okay. You know?
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that's it. You've heard me go on about stuff like that for the best part of 2 years. It is. I mean, I'm interested how you, if you did it now. I mean, I did my first seminar, I think 2012. And what you just said about the insurance guy, I was very conscious when I went to those seminars of showing X, but maybe not showing X, Y, Z, because I thought, if they do all do this, I'm going to be in trouble. So I sort of said, right, you can do this bit, because I knew it wouldn't affect me.
Yeah.
And over time, you learn, actually, most of them give up, Ian. And I've shared a lot more now. You know, just this last week, I give people access to my very own Poisson sheet that is the exact one I use. You know, we've got one on Ultimate, which covers 7 leagues, but I've got one that I do all 28 leagues. It's the first thing we run every morning. Get it going. And I thought, well, people can have it, because one, the likelihood of them doing exactly what I do. Another thing I find, particularly in football, is you tell people to do something and they'll go off and put their own little twist on it. Which I just find absolutely staggering. So you sort of say, well, if you do half time, 2 heads, for example, and if you enter 45 and 65 green on a goal, and then, oh, yeah, well, I'm doing that. And what I do is I do 45, 58, and then I'm doing 72. And if there's a goal, I'm waiting and all that. And I think, well, why don't you just do exactly what you... But I'm interested... I'm interested now, having dealt with however many people you dealt with, would you do anything different?
I think it's interesting. One of the things that springs to mind immediately doing the Zoom meeting here is thinking, well, I ought to do Zoom meetings with people and that. And I put that up there immediately after saying that I'm going to be doing this today. And they all said, yeah, it's a great idea. Like, we should do that, you know. Mm. And I think one of the problems with any group is that sometimes you need to feel as if you are part of a group. Now, we got some very intelligent people on board. I got members on board who, in all walks of life, who are highly successful in different things. And regarding pre-race, you know, I understand that people have only got a certain amount of time for this because they've got family time, they've got their business, their work, et cetera, et cetera. And would I do much different? I don't think. I think maybe I need to be technically better on getting. I've got someone who said to help put two videos together, you know. Mm. But the idea in the first place was doing the one-to-ones live is that nobody else was doing it. Mm. And there isn't anything like live trading because you can't replicate it. You can't edit it. It is what it is, you know. And I think on the whole, I would say that everybody has really found that to be very useful.
Mm.
So when I make a mistake, I can say, well, I made a mistake there. And when you make a mistake, one of the big things I find that you have to accept is that, I mean, I don't have a problem if I go into a market and I make a mistake, I scratch. So the scratch trade is very important because it isn't a question of, oh, I'll just wait now and see if it comes back my way. You have to accept if you've made a mistake, you've made a mistake, full stop, get out and move on, you know. Mm. There've been times when I suppose you think, oh, I wish more people would get involved in the Telegram room or would do more than that. But it comes down to yourself. And I just keep putting stuff in there keep putting up strategies, ideas, and that. And the more you put in and that, the more people are receptive. And the, you know, at the moment, I think we've got a nice bunch of people there. But I think going forward into next year, it'll be good. I need to get I've got three or four people who said they're going to help put a website together. And at the moment, we're sort of between websites. But I think that time January comes, it's not important at the moment. I mean, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, all they got to do is DM me on Twitter or something and I'll get back to them. But no, Ian, can I mention one thing that when you mentioned, you know, it's changing the subject now, but when you're talking about liquidity and volumes in the exchange, I do think, I don't know what your opinion on this is, but obviously we're all Betfair through and through because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
And you have to be where the money is. I do find it disappointing that after 18 years, the competitors haven't managed to put enough into it to have a competition. There's no competition there. Right. At least with the supermarkets, you have Sainsbury, Tesco, Morrison's, Waitrose, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas here, it is really a no-brainer. You have to be with exchanges. And whilst people moan about Betfair, you know, there ain't nothing like it. There's nothing like it, you know. The others just can't compete.
No. I mean, it is. I'm exactly the same. I find it absolutely staggering. I guess Betdaq is probably the biggest next one.
Generally speaking, as a matter of interest, I don't know if you know, but on volume-wise, I reckon it's about half. I look at Betdaq as well as Betfair, but I think it's about 50% on volumes for racing, which is, you know, but it's a no-brainer. You have to trade where the money is.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just really interesting, isn't it, that with the amount of own goals they score Betfair, and they do score a lot of own goals.
I
mean, I get asked all the time. One of the things I got asked last week: do I think, you know, somebody wants to try and do this for a living, do I think Betfair will always be there? And I said, yes, I do. And if they weren't, then there is a hole for exchange betting, because there is nothing like it. So somebody will fill that hole. If Betfair folded tomorrow, somebody will fill that hole. Because if Betfair folded tomorrow, we would all move to Betdaq and use that probably. And then all of a sudden, that's where the money would be. But obviously, most of the apps and things that we use, whilst there's Betdaq versions, they're built for Betfair. But it is just, it's an absolute enigma, isn't it, that not one of them, you know, whoever's come and gone, Matchbooks, Markets, Betdaq, Ladbrokes had a go, you know, in effect, but same thing, that none of them have actually stepped up and really said, these guys are fucking this up. Let's do it better.
Absolutely. I mean, in actual fact, it wouldn't take the technology. I can't believe the technology is, you know, that can be done quite easily.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it's getting everybody to move, isn't it?
And, yeah.
I mean, all you're saying really is, Betfair, get your stuff together and work it out better. You know, I mean, some of the mistakes there are so basic.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of problems, you know, down for me. It's obviously if it goes off at busy times, 3 o'clock on Saturday and that. But obviously I've not had it, but other people talking about deposit issues, them closing accounts, all this know your customer stuff. And then I don't really follow him, but that Carn Berry did an interview with one of the guys. And I thought I'll watch that just to hear what he's got to say. So I put that on for half hour and you listen to him speak.
Yes.
And things like this really annoy me. It's similar, like, you know, I make my views on certain politicians now, because he sits there saying all this stuff and you go, that sounds great, you know, and they're really on top of this and this, that and the other.
But when you
live it and use the exchange every day, you know, like we do, it's just so far from reality what he's saying. And it is. That's exactly it. I just think you just come on here. You've paid lip service. You know, it's saying what you think people want to hear rather than actually get in the trenches and sort the shit out.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we like to be positive all the time about things. But I think there's only the only negative comment I would make is that, or a valid comment, I think, is that when they have a situation where something doesn't go in play or some market suspension problem and that, there is one way to deal with it, and it is simply to have in the rules that if this happens or X or Y happens, then everything is voided.
Void everything, yeah.
Brilliant. So you know, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it goes against your way. Yeah. But the problem is that from their point of view, they're not going to get their change to 5%.
But it is just void everything. Whatever way decision they make, they end up upsetting people. Because when they settle,
like your views on offside or VAR, once you have a rule there, that is the rule. You know, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't.
Exactly, and at least everybody knows where they stand. They get a load of aggro now, whatever they decide, because they upset the people they settle it in favour, they settle against, and the people who they settle in favour are going, oh, yeah, great, they made the right decision. Well, of course they did, because you got paid. So you're there. If you didn't get paid, you wouldn't. But and I agree with you. I just think, just void all of it. Just say, right, we'll avoid that. We've cocked up. Because the customer service element, you know, I mean, that for me, I used to get, and I've learned not to, as I've got older, I guess. I used to get quite abusive to them. Just because I used to you knew you after time you're chatting to somebody who had no interest. I mean, I got a thing about customer service all round, the way it's gone. And I just thought, actually, I'm abusive to them. And it's probably not right. It's not their fault. But it doesn't actually get you anywhere. I'm actually just winding myself up. So I now always say, please, can we have this? Please, can we do that? Please. But it's just, you know, it's just simple things, trying to get football markets up. Get them up.
I mean, without going into the whole wide world, I mean, customer service, totally agree with you. And I think at the moment, and this is speaking from personal experience, that so many companies are still hiding behind the COVID excuse. I mean, British Gas, a classic example, they have an app which is not fit for purpose. There's so many companies in that. And however you view it, the old phrase, the customer is always right. If you use that, then you aren't going to go far wrong. I mean, I've always tried with this service that I've been running is always I will go bend over backwards to help people. And people know, I mean, everybody has got my phone number. In our group, everybody's got my phone number, my email, everything. So I am contactable 24/7, you know. But some of these companies, not only can you not get hold of them by phone, which most people, we obviously work online, but so many of them, you can't get through on live chat. You get a robot that you're talking to or you're doing on live chat, you know. Yeah. And you ask them a question, it says, can I help you with something else? And it's
No, I mean, I've told a couple of stories on mine.
Because you're a Mercedes customer service fan, aren't you?
Yeah, Mercedes, Amazon, Sky, they're all my favourites.
I think I'm probably the only person in the world that's I've never had an Amazon account.
Really?
No, never used them.
You will be in a very small number there, I would think.
I watched the Jeff Bezos documentary. Fascinating man, and incredible business model, how they started that. It's remarkable. But as I was watching, I was thinking, well, I'm probably in less than 1%, I guess.
I would imagine it's really small now. I mean, they are eating the world up. Just on that, we'll get back to betting and racing in a minute. It is interesting, isn't it? Because we all moan. I mean, there's a massive shopping centre near us.
Is that Bluewater, is it?
Yeah, and I met Suggsy. I met Suggsy the other day, yesterday there. But it's like half hour, 40 minutes from me. It's got everything. And when we first moved here and it had just opened, you went up there and it was, wow, this place is amazing. This is unbelievable. You can park for free. Everything you could possibly want, restaurants, cinemas, all the shops you could want. And it is now, I reckon, genuinely 60%, 40% of shops are just boarded up.
Really? Even then?
Yeah. Wow. And whilst obviously people say a lot of it is COVID, it is the fact that whilst we go, oh, look at this, this place is falling apart. I'm as guilty, I step up and get something on Amazon because I don't have to leave my house. Particularly, you know, you've got used to it when we couldn't go out. Well, I'll just get it delivered. I'll just get it. Oh, Christmas stuff. I don't want to risk going out. I'll just get it delivered. And it's so convenient. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you get the TV, you get next day delivery.
I personally can't work out why anybody would want to go around shops other than people maybe want to try different clothes and things like that. I'm not one for that.
No, I can't.
As you can see from my sweatshirt here, I was determined, by the way, not to get called out on what I was wearing as in all the Euro podcast where he was dressing up as Fu Manchu and different people on a daily basis.
Yeah, you do know I call it out as well. That's the thing.
Yeah, I do indeed.
Yeah, I have my standard Ralph Lauren uniform of different colours, and that's it.
Yeah.
But no, I'm the same. I mean, Sam likes shopping. I cannot bear it. I do not understand why anybody wants to walk around these places.
I remember listening to a guy on Radio 5, this is years ago, and he said, why on earth would you go supermarket shopping when you can just click some buttons at home and come and brings it around for you?
Exactly.
Yeah. No extra cost.
Yeah.
And at the time I thought, that's the way to go. Why would you do it?
No, exactly. I'm very much in that camp. And as I say, as such, I've got no right really to moan about these other places shutting down. Yeah.
How are you getting on with your racing services, Ian? I mean, I obviously know what you do and your rap tool and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got hardcore people who use it every day. I mean, the two things compared to football, one, it is every single day and it is more volatile. So we see a bigger churn in racing. You know, people will do it for a month and then go. And I always think, you know my views on punting, particularly if you're doing fixed odds, you've got to try and take a long-term view on it. I understand all the hardness that comes with that and the ups and downs, but that's the skill to master in it for me. Yeah. It's very much like the football. It's all data-based, price-based, the way I use it.
It's interesting because you do your the prices there at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock, unless I'm wrong. And it's quite interesting because doing a daily service as well now, as well as the trading side of things. I'm pretty much involved with racing, I guess, 12 hours a day from early morning. I have a couple of hours there looking at form and things like that, and then going back. And I see the prices and I log down prices of things and that. And in actual fact, with pre-race trading, having said that everything is done in the last 5 minutes, if one was using bigger stakes on some of the short price horses, you can actually get some substantial drifts or steams from the morning markets. Mm. But of course, that involves people. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's why it's perfect for the people in your service where they can just click a button and there it is.
Yeah, I mean, when we set that up, there was two elements to it. One was obviously we wanted to allow people to go on with their day. So we didn't want to get people, but from I may be wrong now, but because I haven't really checked on it. But when I got into punting, I met a guy called James Gregor who was a massive horse race punter, millionaire through horse race punting. I'm going back in the, you know, people have been talking about Barney Curley documentary last night.
I'm going
back to the days when he was backing horses at 50-1 in the morning.
Yeah.
They were going off at 5-6-1.
Really,
One, he was a fantastic form reader, real hard worker. He used to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and do his own form figures.
Yeah.
And because then obviously he started making money, he met people. So he did used to get inside info. I think he had a big in with Stuart Williams.
Yeah.
And they used to back some real, you know, hot horses.
They're renowned for
plots and things. And sort of when I got into this, and I spoke to him about it, and he said 11 o'clock pretty much is the time because he'd done all his business.
Yes, of course. He said,
in effect, the bookies then opened at 9. I don't know what time they open now, but they opened at 9.
Yeah.
And by the time all the people who wanted to back these early prices had backed them, the market, give it a couple of hours, and the market settles down to pretty much where it be. And at that time, I genuinely believe the bookmakers drove Betfair, where now... Yeah. Now, I think, you know, he said, like, people don't need me now, because he used to put on for all sorts of people. But people don't need me now, because if they want to have a grand on themselves, they don't need me and my team running around shops.
No, that's right.
They can drip it in Betfair throughout the day. And back then, there was a bit more pre-race liquidity in the morning. You could drip it in through the day. And I know that sort of dried up a bit. But Betfair probably, you know, everything now is you look on Betfair, then scan odds checker, and everybody's game is trying to arb these things, isn't it?
What is quite funny is that when Betfair have their planned outages in the morning. If they have one that doesn't come back up till 10 a.m., the bookmakers are probably twiddling their thumbs.
Exactly, yeah.
What do we do?
I mean, it's a real sad sort of way the game's gone, that you just can go, you know, you've got people in big firms like William Hill, and all they're doing is looking across Odds Checker and looking at Betfair.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it years ago that the dearth of punters that go, I mean, I can't remember the last time I went in a bookmaker's. I don't know if you can remember.
No, long time for me.
Years ago.
Yeah, long time
for me. Yeah, the only way I'd have gone in, if I was maybe away at a meeting or whatever, and I just walked into one, you know. But years ago, it was everything was geared around the racing. Having the sheets up on the walls,
exactly,
and having the community spirit there. And then, of course, the defining moment was the FOBT. And then once they realized they could make money week after week after week without doing any work, if they were able to, I mean, obviously they were limited to four machines a shop at the time. But if they were able to run the shop without having any staff there, they would have done that. But of course, they weren't allowed to.
Yeah, no.
But, you know, terrible. And so really, the bookmaking service towards racing in particular is very bad now compared to what it used to be.
Yeah. So and that was it. We just sort of set that 11 o'clock would be a pretty accurate market price to put on the sheets was really how we got to it. Perhaps it is something we're looking at the racing setup now. Might be something to revisit. So, if you were saying to somebody now starting out, what would be Steve Williamson, pre-race trader? This is what I do. What would be your one single big bit of advice that you'd give them?
You must be disciplined and patient, and view it as a learning curve in the first 12 months. You can't double your money on day one.
No.
You need to take a bit of a long-term view on it.
Yeah.
But I did joke one day that maybe pre-race trading manually would be the equivalent of thatching a roof now. But it's still something that is very valid and is very low risk and is very doable. And, time day after day, you can do it. And if you want to be in control of what you're earning in that, you can very much do that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a skill, and I don't think they'll always, as long as we've got exchanges, which I think we always will have, there'll always be a place for it. I think there'll always, it's like you say, you're not going to go in lumping 5, 6, 7,000, but for somebody who wants to trade 100, 150 quids and
yeah, I mean, the only problem, of course, with Peter Webb is a classic example that for him, Cheltenham, Royal Ascot, and that are perfect because, yes, you can put thousands and thousands through the market. But from a trading perspective, to use his words, it can be like trading treacle. The man who puts 50 quid into the market, and it may take them, I wouldn't say minutes to get matched, it could take longer than minutes to get matched. The biggest race at the Cheltenham Festival is always the, from a betting perspective, is always the first one, the Supreme Novices. Why? Because it is the first race on the Tuesday, and it's been a 6-month build-up to that. And I was putting in the Telegram room Monday afternoon at 5 o'clock that the favourite had gone from about 2.4 to 2.1, and I suggested that overnight it would go odds on. And by the time it went off the next day, it was 1.7 something. But that's rare. The festivals there where the big money is. So for most people who trade pre-race, they're more of a liability, the big meetings, you know?
Yeah. And going back to what the question I asked you, I think that is exact. I think the one problem that those of us who want to help people, so yourself, myself, people like Peter, the battle we face is that getting people to look at that first 12 months. And if you come out scratch, you've done brilliant. You've done brilliant. But they want to, well, I want to earn, you earn $5,000. So why can't I want to earn it now.
Yeah. I mean, we got one guy who's with you as well, who's picked it up and going remarkably well.
Mm.
It just seems a natural, you know.
Mm.
Whereas others than that, it
I mean, and that's rare. I mean, one of my favorite phrases when I have Zooms with people, to the point that it's probably boring, I said, "You're me in 2007, not me in 2021.
Yeah.
I try and help and short track you because now we've got more data available. At the time, I was working manually, pen and paper, and my Excel skills, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, have come on meeting people like Chris. But I've got all that now, so I can help you because we can get you data better. But the art of using that data and the skill, I've done it for 15 years.
Yeah.
And I know these markets inside out. I know what's going to happen when a gold goes in. I know what price I want to enter at, all that. And people want to learn that in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it is like an apprenticeship, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
I mean, you know, if you are going to be whatever you're going to be, whether it be a plumber, a chippy, carpenter, whatever, whatever you're in, you have to graft. Do your time.
You've got to do it. So whilst you say you have listened back and you don't want to bore people, I'm hoping that 18 months on, Steve, I've got a new cult following and there's lots of people who don't know who you are and haven't heard your stories. So I'm going to ask you again, just to give the guys a little brief insight into how you actually got into this, what you did before. I know you, I mean, you're a man to me who seems to have done everything. Done a bit of DJing, done a bit of that. I mean, I used to live down in, from that last pod, I used to live down in Okehampton when I met Sam. I met Sam and
Exeter. You mentioned the time when you got clumped.
In 1992, I got whacked.
Gentleman was drunk. And you.
I was trying to help him. I was trying to help him, trying to stop him driving, and he punched me. I've DJed there.
Yeah. Nero's, yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of the things with having a photographic memory is that, unfortunately, it's not selective. You remember everything, you know? And, a very, very brief resume, I guess, because I said I did mention how I started 18 months ago. But, when I was at school, I did my A-levels, and I think my parents thought I was going to go into banking or accountancy or maybe the Fleet Air Arm or the RAF or something like that, you know. But I became a professional DJ, decided to go to London, DJed there, and was a DJ for 38 years, primarily on the road and then working clubs. So music's been my biggest part of my life. I've always been one of these people, rightly or wrongly, probably wrongly, because I don't have any sort of pension or anything like that. I've never been a company man. I decided after I finished DJing in 2009 that I wanted to make my living from racing. And so here we are. And that's we went.
And you always had an interest in racing, haven't you? Because what amazes me, and it is a memory. I mean, I've been to, I couldn't even care to remember how many football matches in 45 years.
Hmm.
And I guess I try and forget them because most of them end in defeat for Spurs. So I kind of try and wipe them out.
I was wondering if that name would get mentioned today.
There's some that you can't get rid of, like when we were 3-0 up against United and won five and lost 5-3. And I'd been on the phone in the half time to all my Man United mates because we hadn't beaten them for years. Going, this is it. We've fucking got you now. We've done you here. This is it. And even one of them was on holiday in Tenerife and I phoned him thinking I'd ruin his holiday. And they came out and scored in the 47th minute and the rest is history. But I try and forget. But you just remember horse races. You're like, I mean, there's so many. And you go, oh, yeah, I was there when he won that and he beat so-and-so. And I'm like, how do you remember this? But obviously in your working life, when you were working, doing you obviously were still a massive interest in racing and went racing.
Yeah, as I said last time, that it was a guy that came up to me when I was DJing in a club recommending that I have a small bet on a a horse called Remainder Man in the 1978 Derby. I gave him £20, so we had £10 each way, and it returned 92.50. And I thought, ah, this must be easy.
Yeah.
And then I went racing, actually, at Newton Abbot. I think it was October. It's either October 78 or October 79. I think it's 78. And I actually backed every winner on the card. I had a £50 double, first and last races. And I can remember actually watching a guy having £20 on horses and think, well, how can you do that? And I started off with a pound, you know. And I was extremely lucky as a punter to start with. And at an early stage, in say in 81, I went to the Shergars Derby, went to the 1981 Arc. And yeah, I had the bug then. And I suppose that over the course of many years, I went to a lot of race courses. We used to do the Eclipse meeting at Sandown every year, a group of us, the Hennessy meeting at Newbury. Been going to Cheltenham now since 1985, so which is quite a long time, which actually leads me to, I've actually got a bit of a dilemma at the moment. I've got two tickets for the Grand National next year. I had them for last year, but obviously it was cancelled. But I've got the best seats in the house for next year. And at the moment, there's only me going. So I've got to either give one of those away or work out between now and April who's going to go to that. It's funny because with racing, with people going racing, there's so many people saying, oh, I'd like to go racing and that. And very few do. Like, you know, it's,
yeah.
I suppose it's like getting out there and doing it. But I love going there. But there again, when I go racing, I hardly ever bet. You know, I know most of the bookmakers in the Southwest. I must tell you a quick story about one guy. I won't mention his name, but he was at Wincanton one day on a Sunday. And he said to me, he was looking really glum. And I said, you're right. He said, no. He said, I've lost friends that I've had for 30 years. I said, what happened? He said, well, we had word that the Nichols horse, Pride of Dolco, who was running on the Saturday at Chepstow, had no chance and was something to lay. So all the bookmakers laid it and it won by 35 lengths, 5-2. He was less than impressed. So it goes to show that, you know, it's not only punters that get things wrong as well. And whilst you mention that, I will actually mention, I won't give any names away or anything like that, but I do remember being at Newton Abbot one day and there was a five runner field. And one of the horses had won its last two races and was about 6-4 favourite and was expected to win. And the jockey was just about to get up in the paddock and they just said, not today. And so he lost about 5 lengths at the start, made ground and lost by 2 lengths in the end. You know, I mean, I accept that things go on like that in racing.
Yeah.
Wherever there's money, there's going to be things going on.
Exactly.
And I've always said to people that if you're going to have a bet in a race, you know, particularly at the lower end of the grades, the lower grades, on the all weather, for example, if a horse has won last week at 9-1, then when it's even money next week, that's not the time to be on it because the owners have been on, they've had their money.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's more likelihood of the thing being laid. No. And the best bit of advice for anybody actually backing a horse, I guess, is that the money in the last 60 seconds is far and away the most relevant. Mm. Doesn't mean it's going to win, but it does mean it's going to be trying.
Yeah.
That's half the battle.
Yeah.
With some.
Yeah. I mean, I've the sort of James Gregor I mentioned earlier, that business model has carried on. He's retired now, but one of my best mates in effect still runs that sort of thing, putting bets on for people. They're out in the shops in the morning. And I'm a member of that WhatsApp group. And we got a guy in Scotland who's in it, who's very knowledgeable. You know, he's a form reader. He's very good. He's very good at it. He produces cards for all the big meetings. I get to see them. So, you know, when I'm doing my Cheltenham bits, a lot of that is I'm looking at his stuff. But he has got an absolute thing about when he does, you know, he'll put one up which he thinks he's quite bullish about and he'll tell you he's quite bullish about it. I really like this one today. And he'll tell you why. And he'll do a nice little write-up.
Yeah.
And then it'll finish 10 lengths behind. And it is never, oh, that didn't go as I planned it. It is Dickie Johnson's. I mean, it was always, I ended up calling him, why do you always back Dickie? Because every time he was on one that Johnson didn't win it, Johnson's bent.
Yeah.
The trainer's bent. Have you ever seen a bigger non-trier in your life?
Yeah.
And I one day at Cheltenham, I can't remember whether it's Cheltenham. I think it was Cheltenham. And it wasn't the main Cheltenham meeting. It was the January meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
He backed one that was
the beat. Festival Trials meeting. At the end
yeah,
of the
he backed one that was beat.
Yeah.
And the leader fell at the second last and left his in front and it won. And he never said a word. And then like 2-3 days later, he's having another moan. I said, and I got a bit sick of it. I said to him, you never mentioned the one that was beaten 15 lengths and the horse fell and left yours in front. You forget when it goes your way. And that's my view with things like that, that it does go on, you know.
Absolutely. And
there's no way that we're ever going to stop it going on. We can't control it. It's controlling the controllables. So just accept it. And some go your way and some don't. And it's the same in football with VAR. You know, everybody kicks off. How's that not a goal? Well, it's not a goal. You jumping up and down isn't going to make a goal appear.
Yeah.
You're just wasting energy that you don't need to waste. And I do. I'm a great believer. You know, people say luck evens out. I'm not necessarily certain it always does. But I do think with what we do, if you bet for years and years and years, it is swings and roundabouts. You get some go for you and you get some go against you. Unfortunately, most people want to remember the ones that go against them.
But for what it's worth, just because you mentioned Richard Johnson there, I became a huge fan of his when I watched him at Newton Abbott one day, and he had 5 rides and none of them won. But my goodness me, he didn't have work on them. And he rode everyone out, you know.
Yeah.
And when you're riding something out 5th or 6th, then you realise, you know, that's
I don't know a massive amount about racing. You know, I enjoy it. I enjoy going. But he's run into, you know, somebody like Tony McCoy, who was just absolute different class.
Yeah.
And he finished 2nd to him year after year after year after year. So the guy's obviously a very, very good jockey.
If memory serves me well, I believe that at the last Lingfield FTS bash, a certain person backed a horse about 50-1 that won. Would that be right?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
I remember seeing that on Twitter. Thinking,
I get lucky.
How on earth did he pick that?
I get lucky now and then. I've been quite lucky at Lingfield, actually. I've had a couple of good winners at Lingfield. What's your favourite racetrack?
Favourite racetrack? That's an interesting one.
A bit like one of my current FTS polls. I've got a gun to your head. You can only go to one racetrack. Where are you going?
Yeah, actually, I'll come on to that in a minute. You raised some interesting polls recently. Sandown or Newbury?
Sandown or Newbury?
But the facilities at Sandown are fantastic.
Yeah, I like Sandown. I went there with Suggsy and Kevin and another guy, Chris, from FTS a couple of years ago. We went there for one of the summer meets. I like Sandown.
Yeah, and Newbury's very good. I mean, my local track, if you say local, is 100 miles away, where on the next meeting I'll be going to is the Holden Gold Cup at Exeter. Exeter is a good course because obviously, you know exactly where it is, top of Holden Hill there, and it's the largest course in the country. It's 2 mile 1 right way around, and even if you've got binoculars, even if you're up the stands, you can't see down the far side. You have to use the diamond screens to watch there. That's a very, very good test of a horse, and that's where Cheltenham type horses run. And indeed, very sadly, it was where Best Mate had a heart attack on the home turn. Yeah. Back in, I think it was 2005.
Well, when I met Sam and lived down there, we used to go quite regularly in the summer to both Newton Abbott and Exeter.
Newton Abbott is a great summer course.
Yeah, in the evenings.
And it's ideal for novices because the viewing is good. The course is in front of you, the paddock's behind you, the bar and the bookmakers, everything in the middle there, restaurant. It's good. That's ideal for, obviously, you get a lesser grade of horse running there, but they're a fantastic course and they do have good prize money there and they've done very well over the years. But there's not many that I don't like. I'm not a huge fan of Taunton. I mean, Canton's quite a good track. Yeah, I've been to many. Although the racing isn't of the best grade, I do like Brighton as a course, simply because you can see out to the sea on the right-hand side there. And the it's a very difficult course, though. I mean, if you from a backing point of view, anybody who's punting, the most difficult ones would be the tracks which are unique, i.e. Chester, Brighton, Epsom. That was an experience, Ian, because I was very lucky to be one of the 4,000 people to get a ticket for this year's Derby.
Oh, yeah, you went to the Derby, didn't you?
Yeah, and that's the only time you'll ever go to a Derby where there's only 4,000 people.
Yeah.
That was quite weird in a way because it felt really quiet, you know. Mm. I suppose it must be like going to a Spurs game when there's, you know.
Thanks ever so much. I like York.
I feel a bit guilty. I haven't been there.
Yeah,
and I feel terrible that I haven't been to any of the Irish meetings. I love the Irish. I get on great with them.
I feel guilty that I went to York when Frankel ran there.
Did
and yeah. Didn't watch him.
Really?
I was stuck in the bar having a beer.
Really?
And I got absolute pelters for it.
Really?
I saw him run at Ascot. I went to Ascot when he won the end of season, the Kitco Champions one.
Yeah, of course.
I saw him run and win that. And then he'd run at York. And yeah, I just got involved in the Pims tin.
Yeah. Well, we had a classic trip to the Aintree, the Grand National in 2008. And one of the guys who's still very big in Covent Garden, big dealer there. And I always remember on the Thursday when we walked in, he bought 12 bottles of champagne, pink champagne, to start the day off. But I always remember the Sunday morning, we were all staying in the infamous Adelphi Hotel. And on the Sunday morning, he went down to breakfast and he just sat down and he said, who won the National? He'd been in the bar all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no idea.
It's something I am ashamed of. I do. I look back and go, how can you go all that way and not watch that? I told a story on that. I played golf with Suggsy and a couple of FTS guys yesterday. A lovely day. And I told a story. I went to Turkey and I flew home after a day. I went to Turkey golfing. I don't know if I've told this on the pod. I flew home after a day. I went for a week and a guy had asked me to go. They had 15. He said, could you make up the 16? Because he knew I could, you know, afford it and drop. And I went, yeah, as long as I've got internet and that, I'll come. And we flew out there. I never knew any of these guys bar him. And we drew four balls in the afternoon when we got there. And I ended up on the course with these three guys the next day. And they were just absolute bellends. Mm. One of them I was in a buggy with. He just drove me mad. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And then I got in the bar in the evening and they drew again and I got him again. And I went up to my room and I thought, my room was on about a sixth floor balcony. And I honestly stood out on the balcony. I phoned Sam and I said, I'll have more fun leaping off this balcony than playing golf with this guy again. And I sort of just started, I thought, fuck it, I'm going home. And I booked an easy jet flight. I went round to the guy. So I'm really sorry. So I just can't do this. It's not for me. I'm flying home. And one of my mates' dads, the guy who runs the horse racing now, I was bumped into him a couple of days later and he said, I thought you were in Turkey. I said, yeah, I was. I flew home and I told him the story. And he had a right go at me. He said, you're an absolute disgrace. He said, you've just got no respect for money. He said, people save all year to do things like that. And you just sack it off after a day. And it's much the same at York, you know, he sort of said people, you know, save up to go up tickets. And you got arguably one of the greatest horses that's ever run and you can't be bothered to get out of the bar. So it's not things I'm proud of. I just look and think it is, you know, you look back and go, yeah, other people would love to do that. And see.
Would that be the sort of similar to when you left the Sillies?
Very similar, yeah. Yes, under different circumstances, slightly though.
I think my equivalent of that would be slightly more lower grade. It's probably, I know exactly what it was. I'd finished it, the Cheltenham Festival, done the Gold Cup, and my mates were going to one of these adult weekends at Butlins at Minehead with all the bands on, you know. So they were all plotted up there in the paltry accommodation that they had. I turned up about 7 in the evening, walked into the bar and all these leery people in there. I had about 10 minutes there. I thought, oh, No, I'm going home. So I just got back in the car.
I've done that before. I was at a stag doing Bognor at the Butlins. Aren't they hideous?
Yeah.
And there was a poker tournament down the road. I went and played in that.
Yeah. I just a few minutes of people shouting and hollering and that.
Yeah. No, they are hideous. They are hideous places. Right, Steve. Any other little story? Let's have a little 5 minutes. Anything you want to ask me or any other little stories, and then we'll wrap up and let these people crack on.
I think the next year for me, I'm sort of the next thing I want to do. I haven't been able to, because of what's been going on in the world, I haven't been able to get to Australia. So I'm hoping that by next August, September, hopefully the Australian government will allow people to go there. So that's the only thing I got planned on the horizon there. Let's think, any other questions there? No, I'm looking forward to coming up to Lingfield.
Yeah.
To meet some of your
Be good fun.
Associates. Compatriots who appear on Twitter regularly.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a couple there who you've done have done your course as well, I would think.
In actual fact, I think there's a fairly high percentage of people are FDS members. Yeah. You know, I would say that probably, if it isn't 50%, it may even be more than that.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good. It's good that they want to learn. And as I say, you are, you know, and I'm not just pissing up your back, you are fantastic at what you do and do it right. And good integrity, good all round. What I'd call a good egg. I don't know what a good egg is, but you're a good egg.
Yeah,
that's what I'd say.
The one thing I'm reasonably pleased about, I don't post much on Twitter now, but I have managed to avoid, other than a couple of silly emails, I have avoided a lot of flack on there, which has been quite nice, which I suppose is testament to the fact that you try and put the correct things there. I mean, obviously, the jokes, you sort of, they are there to, you know. I mean, actually, I must admit, polls.
They are terrible.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't disagree with that. As Jethro said, I resemble that remark.
Mm.
There is one poll that you put up there, and it was terrible for me because I am a Beatles nut, and I think it was Scott that put that he'd they were before his time or whatever. Well, the fact of the matter is that Lennon McCartney are the best songwriting team ever. There's no argument. It's like you with certain things that you won't get into discussion with. That's the way it is. And who's your favourite Beatle? Well, you just couldn't answer that. But you've had some very interesting ones on there.
For those who've not, I've run some. I'm running my own sort of Myers-Briggs test. What I love about that is people tell me that the wrong answer isn't there or that answers aren't valid. It's actually genuinely on a psychological level. I'm looking for particular answers, basically, is what I'm trying to seek out. And there's, in every one of those, there's two extreme type answers and then two that don't really matter.
I have to say that on about three occasions, I've actually, the one I voted for has been the least popular.
Yeah, and it is, unless it is things like the favourite Beatle and things like that. But there will be an end goal at that in January. In effect, there'll be a Google Doc with all the questions up. Every answer's got a mark. And from that mark, you'll get whatever you read into it, a personality mark. But it is really interesting. And funnily enough, we went for a curry after the golf last night. And the guy we play with, Mick McManus, who you'll meet at Lingfield, Mick is an absolute character, much like you worked in the music industry. His son's a singer, musician. And he said last night, exactly what you've just said, almost word for word. He said, the Beatles are the greatest band there has ever been. No question, no arguments. He said that. And I can't really argue with him. You know, I wasn't alive when they were.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, one of the highlights of my life was being backstage with Queen. I mean, I told everybody that because when everybody, I've always said to people, I have no pension, I have nothing, but I've met Queen, and I found a photograph of Roger Taylor, the drummer, drumming at Truro School when he was 15 years old, and I not only had the photograph, I had the negative as well, so I had copyright on it. And that made the Queen thank. I took it round to Roger's mum, put it through a letterbox. I didn't be intrusive. I didn't knock on the door or anything like that. And she phoned me up afterwards. She said she'd never seen the photograph. If you just Google now, Roger Taylor drumming at Truro School, it's on there. And that made the Queen Fan Club magazine, the Record Collector magazine, and that. Love the band, fantastic band. Mercury, brilliant. But, you know, and other bands, Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, and a lot of newer stuff as well. But no, the Beatles, the facts speak for themselves as to what they've done, you know.
Yeah, they are. The one that got me with that was, I think it was Chris Wilkinson, but can't.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Can't stand them.
That's right.
I thought, and I'll be honest, Chris, I get that you might not be for
that's
you,
right.
But I think to say you hate the Beatles or can't stand them is some very lateral sideways thinking there.
I mean,
of the songs, it doesn't matter what your tastes are, there's just songs that come on, the Beatles songs, that are just, you just think, this is great. What a great tune.
I tell you what, Ian, that reminded me, when I saw that remark, it reminded me of when I was in the insurance business in the 80s, when people said, oh, I don't believe in life insurance. I mean, we're not talking about religion. We're talking about facts.
No, that's right. Steve, an absolute pleasure to speak to you as always.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. You're starting my Zoom career here now.
Yeah, well, this is it. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you a quick tech lesson for everybody who's in your group. You can do multiple people, so you can do them all at once, which is really good. And if you did ever want to show people, you can share your screen and do it as well, so they can actually see what you do. But I do it for the football. Like, I'm going to do one this week when my Poisson sheet comes out, where they can all come in. So in effect, I can talk to 20 people at once, as opposed to having to have individual ones. So that's one of the great advantages with it.
I put in the room that it would be, I'm probably going to do just general Q&A to start with.
Yeah, just have one and have people in and ask you. Exactly. Yeah. Let me know. I'll come in.
Yeah.
Let me know when it is. I'll jump in.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks ever so much for today, Ian.
No, thank you for coming on. No, Steve, you're an
absolute. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know if you can see in the background, but it's very sunny here in Cornwall today.
It looks lovely. Yeah, and actually, we had a good day. The golf course yesterday, I think we got another 6-7 days of it. Weather out lasts, and
of course it's three weeks this coming Sunday when of course the clocks go back, and now it's almost dark. It's 7 o'clock now, and
that'll be it.
So it's going to be 6 o'clock, and that's it. Then from my perspective, racing goes from like 1 o'clock to about midday, and then that's when I tend to go to bed a little bit earlier, and on occasions, well, maybe a couple times a week, doing the Australian stuff.
Get up and do the Aussie stuff. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And that's all good. Liquidity, and that's all good. The Aussie stuff.
Well, yeah, you've got the November Carnival coming up at Melbourne, which obviously with the Melbourne Cup, which is the first Tuesday in November. So you've got that runs over several weeks, and you can have races there on a Saturday morning. You can have races anyway at Randwick, Flemington, Caulfield, where you're going to get, you can have volumes of in excess of 300,000-400,000 there.
Wow.
So, you know, whereas some of the provincial ones, I've traded races where there's only 20-30 grand in, but that's where you've got to be sharp. And what is quite useful is it's quite satisfying sometimes. So when those markets have a gap in them, you can actually put the back of the lane and they both get matched. And
The 20,000 ones are the ones Peter Webb hasn't got up for. The 300,000 ones are the ones he has got up for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Not content with making money here. He has to go to Australia.
Yeah. All right, mate. I'm going to let you be. That's absolutely. Yeah. I hope you have a successful day in the markets today. I'll catch up with you soon. We speak anyway.
Yeah. So thanks ever so much, Ian.
But thanks for coming on. And this will be up. Be up for you in a bit. About half hour's time, but thanks always for your time. Brilliant.
Thanks ever so much.
Cheers, Steve. Bye.
Bye.